Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Ashling Wehner. In today's episode, supported by Real Chemistry, we had the pleasure of speaking with Robbie Salgia, MD, PhD, about the use of tepotinib in patients with non-small cell lung cancer harboring MET exon 14 skipping mutations. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Salgia discussed key updated findings from the Phase 2 VISION trial investigating tepotinib in patients with non-small cell lung cancer with MET exon 14 skipping mutations, results from a real-world analysis comparing tepotinib versus capmatinib in patients with stage 4 disease, and how he chooses between these two agents in the clinic. Thank you so much, Dr. Salgia, for taking the time to speak with us today on an episode of Onc Live On Air about the use of tepotinib in MET exon 14 mutated non-small cell lung cancer. So just to start off, could you briefly summarize the rationale and design of the VISION trial?
The VISION trial is based on MET exon 14, and it's dependent on really this phase 2 single-arm, open-label, multi-center trial of tepotinib, and they had cohorts A and C. And this was truly looking at patients with non-small cell lung cancer with MET exon 14 who may respond to first-line therapy or second-line and above therapies. And it's been going on for some time, but retrospective analysis has been done as well. And cross comparisons have not been done in terms of a randomized phase 2 trial or a phase 3 trial in its own right to be able to say, you know, how important are combinational events, but at least for the VISION trial, it really led us to revolutionary treatment for MET exon 14.
Diving into some of the details of that trial, what were some of the key efficacy findings from the 18-month follow-up analysis of VISION?
VISION trial itself is for tepotinib, and that was looking initially at cohort A and C. And cohort C is really very important because it's a follow-up for 18 months. And as we look at this, the overall response rate was 55.9 months. That was in greater than or equal to 18 months follow-up. And the median duration of response was 20.8 months. And in terms of this, there have been papers that have been published, especially recent in terms of JAMA Oncology, for this, and the cohort C involved 161 patients. Cohort A really involved 152 patients, and combinations of cohort A and C had an overall response rate of 57.3%, and previous therapy patients was 45%, and the median duration of response was 46.4 versus 12.6 months. So we really want to really look at the concept of how important is this drug in the context of MET exon 14 and really decide if we want to be able to do this in early stage or late stage in first line therapy or second line or multiple therapeutics themselves. And that's all going to be important for us as we go forward.
Can you describe a little bit about the safety profile of tepotinib and maybe how this safety profile affects patient quality of life?
Yeah, so that was presented at ASCO this year, and that has been published as well. And what's important is we have to cross compare these drugs. So tepotinib is one drug against MET exon 14. At the same time, we know that capmatinib has also been approved for MET exon 14, and that was the geometry trial. So I just want to go over a little bit of how we think about these things. The capmatinib itself is given at 400 milligrams without regards to food, and it's BID drug, and tepotinib is 450 milligram once daily with food. And in capmatinib, you have to avoid concomitant use with strong and moderate CYP3A inducers. And also for capmatinib, the common reactions were peripheral edema, which was high, greater than 52% or so, nausea 44%, fatigue at 32%, vomiting at 28%, dyspnea at 24%, and decreased appetite at 21%. This was the real world outcomes that was presented at ASCO from our Mayo Clinic colleagues. Whereas tepotinib, you have to avoid concomitant use with dual strong CYP3A inhibitors and the PGP inhibitors or strong CYP3A inducers. And the common adverse reactions were edema, 81%, nausea, 31%, fatigue, 30%, musculoskeletal pain, 30%, diarrhea was 29%, dyspnea was 24%, rash, 21%, and decreased appetite. This was an important study that was presented at ASCO in terms of the real-world outcomes because they seem very similar. And what they had evaluated, you have to keep in mind the number of patients. So it was a total of 49 patients that they evaluated, and 45 patients got capmatinib, and the PFS was 12 months. And tepotinib, only 14 patients got tepotinib, and it was 8.94 months PFS. The discontinuation rate, that's an important one for us, is how tolerable is this drug? What is the quality of life based on these adverse reactions? So the discontinuation rate was between 20 to 28%. That's relatively high for these kinds of drugs, but we do know that they're giving us an incredible amount of benefits. So we have to learn and be aware of how to take care of these side effects. You know, it's very important to work with people who know how to give these drugs, how to manage these side effects. So at our institution at City of Hope, we work closely in a care model where we have physicians, we have APPs, we have nursing, we have MAs, we also have pharmacists. And we talk about that. And when patients complain, especially about edema, certainly you could think about stockings in the legs. That's important. At the same time, sometimes you can give them diuretics. And if they are very severe side effects, you have to hold the drug for a while, let's say for about a week to 2 weeks, and then reinstitute, or you can decrease the dosage of the drug. All of those are crucial for us. And because in Medexon 14, a large number of patients are older patients. So unlike, for example, EGFR mutation or ALK fusions, where you're seeing more younger patients, we're seeing many more older patients with these Medexon 14. And that's an important differentiator because the older a person is, you can have comorbidities as well. So you can have heart disease, or if you have smokers, they can have COPD. So you have to be able to manage those as well. So you truly have to have your internal medicine hat on to be able to really take great care of patients.
I know that you mentioned the ASCO presentation that was comparing the real-world outcomes between tepotinib and capmatinib. Is there anything else that you would like to say here about some of the findings from the study?
I want to go back to the basics for a few minutes, and that is, what is MET and what is the MET receptor tyrosine kinase? Why is it important for therapeutic targeting? So I've been working on this field for over 25 years now in the MET receptor tyrosine kinase and its ligand hepatocyte growth factor. Initially, we had identified in my lab this Medexon 14 in lung cancer, and it took us a while to figure out how to target it properly because the relative incidence is not that high. So in adenocarcinoma, it can be between like 2 to 3%, in squamous cell carcinoma between 1 to 2%, and in sarcomatoid tumor between 10 to 15% or so. But then not only can Medexon 14 exist as a splice variant, you can have MET amplification that can be de novo in about 1 to 5% of the patients. But then you can have acquired resistance, for example, in EGFR resistance models and in patients that we give tyrosine kinase inhibitors, you can have a high MET amplification, even up to 30% of those patients. Then the third thing you have to think about, MET as a receptor tyrosine kinase and as a target, you can have overexpression. And the overexpression is all over the place depending on how you do immunohistochemistry. It can be between like 35 to 70% or so. So all of those factor in terms of how we think about Medexon 14 and the therapeutic targeting. So initially, when I had started my career, we had looked at crizotinib, and crizotinib was one of the first drugs for Medexon 14. And however, it didn't really cross the blood-brain barrier as well, whereas tepotinib and capmatinib are getting better PFS, better overall survival. So capmatinib in the geometry trial has been done, and it's very similar in terms of PFS as well as overall survival. And tepotinib, of course, is the VISION trial we just talked about. The key issue for us in the MET world, I already talked about it's in the older population, but you can also have cross mutations or concomitant mutations. There can be coexistence, for example, of KRAS mutations that can occur. So you have to take that into account. At the same time, we know that the pattern of spread for Medexon 14 can be in the brain. So you have to think about, do these drugs cross the blood-brain barrier? So one of the things you have to learn from the real-world outcome, as well as from this matching adjusted indirect comparison that was presented as well, is to be able to say, how are we going to control the brain metastasis? Can you prevent brain metastasis? So clearly, from the geometry trial as well as the vision trials, we have seen capmatinib be, for example, very small number of patients that have been presented. You can have it up to a little bit over 50% in terms of brain metastasis and effectiveness. Tepotinib initially was touted as 66% or so. So all of those factor into our equation when we treat our patients. So we have to really be cognizant of that as we go forward for the future.
Is there anything else that you would like to say here, maybe as a main message to colleagues about these agents and the patient population?
Certainly, MET receptor tyrosine kinase and therapeutic targeting for MET is here to stay. I take pride in the fact that we have been one of the leaders to be able to do this since the beginning. So I'm very happy to see this come to fruition over my lifetime of work as well. At the same time, we have a long ways to go still. I talked about the overall survival and the PFS as well as the duration of response. We really need to be able to cure lung cancer. And even MET-driven lung cancers, be they in stage one setting or stage four setting. So we need to continue to do more clinical trials to say, how can we better the overall survival for our patients, prevent the toxicities, at the same time, come up with better drugs and/or come up with better combinations. And all of those will play a role over the next 5 to 10 years for us.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of Onclive On Air, supported by Real Chemistry. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. Onclive is also on social media. On X, follow us at Onclive. On Facebook, like us at Onclive. And follow our Onclive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of Onclive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to Onclive On Air.